2.07. The maglev speared into the tunnel, and Dahlia cried out in terror as the blackness swallowed them. She clung close to Caxton as the compartment lights flickered on, and he put his arms around her, shrugging in puzzlement at her fright. Sickly fluorescence bathed the compartment, but the glass window was an unchanging black mirror. Dahlia recoiled from its impenetrable depths, pushing away in terror from the wall with her sandaled feet. Her breaths came in short, panicked hikes, and her muscles cramped painfully. She felt her flesh become cold and clammy as sweat filmed her skin. She could hear her heartbeat like the thunder of an industrial hammer, and tears pricked at the corners of her eyes.
"Dahlia," asked Caxton. "Dahlia, what's the matter?"
"It's the darkness," she gasped,
burying her face in his shoulder.
"It's all around me."
"Dahlia, what? I don't understand."
"What's the matter with her?" cried Severin.
"I don't know,"
said Caxton, helpless as Dahlia sobbed into his robes, her struggles becoming more and more hysterical. "She's having a panic attack," said Romeo 31, moving from the door of their compartment to stand in front of Dahlia. "I've seen it before in new arrivals to Mars. The red planet is so different, it sparks all kinds of reactions."
"So what do we do?"
"There's nothing you can do," replied Romeo 31. "But I've dealt with this before." The Protector knelt on the floor between the seats and placed a hand on Dahlia's shoulder, prizing her away from Caxton and holding her twitching limbs. Her face was pale and streaked with tears.
"The darkness," wept Dahlia. "I don't want to go into the darkness again. Not again."
"What's she talking about?" said Severin.
"Make her stop."
"Shut up," hissed Zouche. "Let the man work."
"Dahlia," said Romeo 31, looking directly into her eyes. "You are having a panic attack, but there's nothing to worry about. We are perfectly safe. I know you don't feel like that right now, but trust me, it's true." Dahlia looked up at him and shook her head.
"No, no, we're not. I can't face it anymore. Please don't make me go back in there."
"We'll be out of the tunnel soon enough, Dahlia," said Romeo 31, keeping his voice even and steady. She could feel his biometrics linking with hers, using his rigidly controlled metabolic mechanisms to try and stabilize hers. "Breathe slowly," advised Romeo 31. "You're taking in too much oxygen, and you don't want to do that, do you?" She shook her head and forced herself to take longer, slower breaths. With the help of Romeo 31's bodily control, she felt her heart begin to slow and the flow of blood to her muscles lessen. Romeo 31 read her calming internal functions and nodded. "Very good," he said. "These are all just physical symptoms of anxiety. They're not dangerous. It's an evolutionary reaction from ancient times when humans needed all their wits about them for a fight or flight reaction. Your body has tripped that reaction, but it's a false alarm, Dahlia. Do you understand that?"
"Of course I do," said Dahlia, between breaths and tears. "I'm not stupid, but I can't help it."
"Yes, you can," promised Romeo 31. And he knelt with her until the panic had passed, holding her hands and talking in low, soothing tones. He reminded her that she was traveling on a Mechanicum maglev, one of the safest means of transport on Mars, and that she was surrounded by her friends. Eventually, his words and his gentle easing down of her metabolism calmed her to the point where her breathing rate was normalized and her heart rate, while still elevated, was less like the rattle of an automated nail gun.
"Thank you,"
said Dahlia, wiping her eyes on the sleeves of her robe.
"I feel so stupid. I mean, we're only going through a tunnel. I've never felt claustrophobic or scared of the dark before."
"Only since the accident in Zeth's inner forge," said Zouche.
"Yes, I suppose since then," agreed Dahlia.
"Maybe you're feeling its fear,"
said Severin, and they all turned towards her.
"Feeling whose fear?" asked Caxton.
"Whatever it is that's buried beneath the Noctis Labyrinthus," said Severin,
suddenly awkward with the attention.
"Look, she said she felt she linked with its mind, didn't she?"
"I don't know about you, but if I'd been buried underground for that length of time and I got a brief glimpse of the world above, I wouldn't want to go back into the darkness either."
"You may have something there, Severin," said Caxton.
"What do you think, Dahlia?"
Dahlia nodded, unwilling to confront such thoughts head-on after her panic attack.
"Maybe.
No, no, I really think Severine's onto something here, said Caxton. I mean if...
Enough, said Romeo 31. Save it until we're out of the tunnel. Zoosh, how long until we reach the other side? Zoosh hurriedly reconnected with the maglev's onboard cogitator, and streams of data light cascaded behind his eyes. Romeo 31 turned his attention back to Dahlia, and she smiled at him.
Thank you, she said.
He bowed his head, and though she couldn't see his face, she knew he was smiling back at her.
Well?
Asked Dahlia, in as relaxed a manner as she could muster. How long until we're clear of the tunnel, Zoosh? Zoosh frowned and moved his hands in the air, haptically shifting through holographic data plates only he could see.
I'm not sure, he said. According to the onboard driver servitor, we're slowing down.
Slowing down? Why? Demanded Romeo 31, and Dahlia felt his threat aspects light up.
Here, look for yourself, replied Zoosh,
projecting the view of the tunnel from the hull-mounted picter onto the window once more.
There's something ahead of us.
They looked, and there was. Rumbling along the floor of the tunnel towards the decelerating maglev was what looked like a tall robot of roughly spherical proportions, mounted on a heavy-gauge track unit. A pair of heavy arms were held vertically at its sides, and a set of malleable weapon dendrites flexed in the air above its shoulder guards. Three glowing yellow orbs shone like baleful eyes in the center of its mass, and as they watched, its main arms locked into the upright position. As the maglev stopped, no one in the compartment failed to notice that each arm was equipped with an enormous weapon. Even through the poor quality of the picture's image, Dahlia could feel the strangeness and uniqueness of this machine's electrical field. Opening herself to the part of her mind that Zeth had called her innate connection to the ether, she reached out towards the machine, reading the heat of its internal reactor and the sticky web of dark, malicious sentience at its core. Kaban. That was its name. In the fleeting moment of connection, she read the memory of its creation and the killing of its former friend, an adept named Pallas Ravachol. With that death, the machine's murderous nature had been unleashed, and the primordial evil with which its masters had tainted its artificial intelligence now consumed it with dreadful, killing lust.
"Is that a battle robot?" asked Caxton.
"It's much more than a robot," said Dahlia,
her eyes snapping open. "It's something far worse."
"What?"
"A sentient machine,"
gasped Dahlia, still reeling from the moment of connection to its grossly warped consciousness and the awful clarity of its purpose.
"It's an artificial intelligence, and it's been corrupted with something vile, something evil."
"Evil? That's nonsense," said Zoosh. "What do machines know of evil?"
"What does it want?"
asked Severine. Dahlia looked over at Romeo 31 in uncomprehending terror.
"It's here to kill me."
The cabin machine opened fire, and the driver servitor's compartment disintegrated in a blitzing storm of lasfire and plasma bolts. Flames boomed from the ruptured energy cells, and the darkness of the tunnel was suddenly dispelled. Romeo 31 grabbed Dahlia and hauled her from her seat as the machine rumbled down the tunnel, its weapon arms wreathed in halos of white fire as it systematically obliterated carriage after carriage. Designed to penetrate the hulls of battle tanks and overload the void shields of Titans, its sustained fire easily sliced through the sheet metal of the maglev's sides. Caxton, Severine, and Zoosh needed no encouragement to follow Romeo 31 and blundered into the corridor beyond their compartment in terror. The noise from outside the maglev was deafening, thudding pressure waves of explosions laced with the squeal and hiss of impacting lasers. The bark of solid rounds and the whine of ricochets echoed from the tunnel walls. The maglev shuddered like a wounded beast, flames and smoke erupting along its length as it was systematically riddled with gunfire. Dahlia heard screams from further along the maglev as passengers were chewed up in the fusillade. The corridor was a mass of terrified people, its length choked with panicked bodies. Men and women screamed and clawed at one another as they fought to escape the approaching slaughter. Romeo 31 gathered Dahlia into his arms and forced a path through the heaving, jammed mass of people fleeing towards the rear of the maglev.
"Get out of the way!"
bellowed Romeo 31 in the most belligerent form of cant, and such was the ingrained reverence for a Mechanicum protector that the majority of people did exactly that. With his weapon stave extended before him, he pushed along the corridor towards an emergency exit. Dahlia looked over Romeo-31's shoulder, seeing terrified faces pressing against the wall of the corridor as they slammed fists, fire extinguishers, or anything else they could get their hands on to smash the glass. Through the window on the door at the end of the corridor, Dahlia could see bright flames and black smoke.
"Hurry!" shouted Severine. "For the love of the Omnissiah, hurry up!"
A searing white lance of plasma cut into the carriage, sawing through the metal and glass like a laser saw. The beam instantly sliced 24 people in half, and Dahlia wept as she smelled boiled blood and scorched meat.
"Down!" shouted Romeo-31,
bearing Dahlia and Caxton to the floor of the corridor. Severine was quick to follow, and Zeus had already been borne to his knees by the stampede. The incandescent beam zipped along the corridor, killing as it went, and Dahlia watched in mute horror as severed limbs, cleaved bodies, and disembodied heads fell to the floor. She rolled onto her side as the deadly beam passed overhead, and droplets of molten metal splashed the floor beside her. She cried out as one scorched a thin line down her arm.
"Sacred fathers!"
hissed Zeus, rolling onto his front as an explosion further back whipped the maglev like a sine wave. Everyone screamed as it was lifted from the rails, with a screech of torn metal and a crackling burst of arcing electrics. Dahlia scrambled on her knees towards Romeo-31 as the carriage tipped from the track and her world spun crazily. It crashed to the tunnel floor, and the windows blew out with the force of the impact. A blizzard of crystalline fragments rained down. The breath was knocked from her, and Dahlia felt blood dripping into her eyes. A heavy weight pinned her, and she blinked away red tears as she heard more deafening blasts of gunfire. She couldn't tell how close it was, but the stuttering, strobing flash of weapons fire felt as though it were coming from right outside their carriage. Dahlia fought to free herself from the weight pinning her to the ceiling. Which way was up and which was down? She couldn't hear any screams. Had the cabin machine killed everyone? A man's body lay sprawled across her, or at least half of him, and she cried as she pushed his bifurcated body from her. The metal beneath her, the ceiling, she was sure of it now, was sticky with warm blood, and she whimpered in terror at the sight of heaped mounds of corpses filling the corridor. The iron stink of blood was thick in her nostrils, and Dahlia couldn't remember a more awful smell. She retched dryly at the sight of so many dead, terrified and numbed by the horror of how quickly their grand adventure had come to such a bloody end. Despite the stink of death, she took a deep breath and looked for her friends amid the wreckage and carnage. Dahlia saw Romeo-31 lying further along the buckled corridor with a jagged spar of metal impaling his shoulder. The Protector's biometrics were fluctuating, but he was alive. Zeus lay in a heap of bodies, his face a mask of blood, but she couldn't tell whether it was his or belonged to someone else. Caxton was just behind her, pinned to the floor by a metal door in the midst of a spray of glass fragments. His eyes were open and pleading, a low moaning issuing from between bloodied lips. Severine lay beneath a nutrient dispensing machine that had torn loose from the wall, her arm thrown out before her and twisted at an unnatural angle. Her eyes were closed, but her pained expression and rapid, shallow breaths told Dahlia she was alive. The carriage was still, no straining bodies or panicked shoving, and the only light came from smashed lumen globes that sparked and stuttered in the half-light. After such a tremendous cacophony of violence and noise, the silence that enveloped her was as welcome as it was terrifying. Dahlia began to crawl towards Romeo-31. He saw her coming and shook his head, placing a finger to the grilled mouthpiece of his helmet. At first, Dahlia didn't understand. Then she heard it. Over the creaking wreckage and tinkle of falling glass, she felt the vibration of the heavy machine through the ground as it crushed metal and ruptured bodies beneath its tracks. Dahlia craned her neck to look through the shattered window into the sputtering darkness of the tunnel, and fought down the urge to cry out as she saw the monstrous form of the sentient machine rumbling towards where they lay. She felt the crawling pressure of its corrupted mind as it swept the carriage for life signs, and heard the rattle of its autoloaders feeding its weapons fresh ammunition. It drew nearer with every breath, and in moments its auspects would register their presence. Then it would kill them. Princeps Cavallario finished processing the feeds in loading into his casket at a rate of over 6,000 data packets per second. The Martian networks had slowly returned to normal after the scrap code plague. The diligence of the code scrubbers and Magos Probandi all across the Red Planet, finally re-establishing communications and information exchanges. Fresh reports, petitions, and pleas for aid from forges far and wide were streaming into Escreus Mons through the Vox, across the New Sphere, and via optic feeds. It was a bleak picture they painted of the Mechanicum's future. Cavallario let his mind swim up through the reams of liquid information that flowed around and through him. He saw Agathy's face before him, and set the biometrics of his casket from processing to consciousness. His Famulus nodded as she read the information on the slate fixed to the side of the casket, and retreated to a subordinate position behind him. Cavallario's manifold senses processed his surroundings. His casket sat in the position of honor in the chamber of the First, raised on a plinth before the mighty, towering form of Deus Tempestus, the first god-machine of the Legio. Princeps Sharak stood before him, waiting to hear whether he would give an order of execution. Though Sharak had correctly appointed himself the acting Princeps Senioris of the Tempestus forces on Mars, he knew and welcomed the fact that any order to walk should come from the Stormlord. Behind Sharak were his Legio brothers, each awaiting the Stormlord's decision. Princeps Suzak, the grim-faced hunter who commanded the warlord Tharsis Hastatus, watched with an impassive eye, while Princeps Mordant of the Reaver Arcadius Fortis strained like an attack dog on a leash. The Warhound drivers, Bazek of Vulpus Rex, Cassim of Raptoria, and Lamnos of Astrus Lux, paced like caged wolves, and Cavallario rejoiced in the fearful power he saw before him.
"Stormlord," said Sharak, "the Princeps are gathered as you ordered."
"Thank you, Kel," said Cavallario, before enhancing his augmitters to address the Princeps of his Legio. "I know you're all waiting to see whether I give an order of execution, but before I tell you my decision, we need to understand what might happen as a result. I've given great thought to this, because a wrong choice will have consequences none of us can imagine. The forges of Mars burn in the fires of schism, and factional violence is reaching epidemic proportions all across our homeworld. So far, that violence has been restricted to the Mechanicum. None of the Titan legions have yet initiated any hostilities, but it's surely only a matter of time until that happens."
He could see their hunger to be unleashed, proud of their courage, yet saddened by their eagerness to fight their erstwhile brothers.
"Before you all rush to your engines, gentlemen, let's be clear on one thing. If the Titan legions march to war, there will be no coming back from it. We will have unleashed the fire of a civil war that will only be extinguished by the utter destruction of one side or the other. I have always sought to keep our Legio free from the insidious poison of politicking. I believe that the Titan legions should remain true to their warrior ideals and not be instruments of political will, save that of the Imperium itself. Mars faces the gravest crisis in its long and glorious history, and warriors of honor and courage do not stand idly by in such times. They act. They stand firm in the face of aggression and in the defense of their allies."
Cavallario paused, allowing his words to hit home before continuing.
"The idea that one Legio would fight another is anathema to me, but I am not fool enough to believe that such a time is not coming."
"It has already arrived," said Princeps Mordant. "Mortis is spoiling for battle."
"Indeed," said Cavallario. "The blatantly provocative walk on Ascreus Mons by the Mortis engines was little more than an attempt to bait us into a shooting war we could not win."
He stifled their denials with a harsh blurt of impatient code.
"I admire your bravery and faith in one another, but had we fought, we would have died."
"So what do we do, Stormlord?" demanded Princeps Suzak. "Do we swallow our pride and do nothing as Mars tears itself apart? We are a force for stability. Use us!"
"No, Vlad, we do not swallow our pride," said Cavallario. "I will unleash the power of the Legio, and we will rise to the defense of the ideals for which our world stands. The fury of Tempestus will fall upon the enemies of Mars, and together we will scour them from the face of the Red Planet in a tide of fire and blood."
"You walk with us?"
asked Princeps Cassim. "How?
The tech priests say Victrix Magna is beyond their ability to restore.
I know that, Zaphir. But still, I will walk with you, declared Cavalerio. I will walk alongside you as I have always dreamed I would make my last walk. With the first god machine of our Legio, I will become one with Deus Tempestus.
Princeps Sharak stepped forward.
Then, is the word given?
The word is given, said Cavalerio. Tempestus goes to war.
The machine paused in its advance. Dahlia could hear the throaty growl of its power plant and the hiss of its hydraulics, and could feel the fizzing heat of its electrical field. She could smell the smoky residue of hard rounds fire and taste the ozone from the plasma discharges. Her every sense was magnified, and she fought the urge to cry as she saw the ground-up flesh worked into the grooves of its tracks. Romeo 31 slid his hand towards his weapon stave, but Dahlia knew it would be no protection against such a destructive machine. Caxton, Severine, and Zoosh trembled in fear, too hurt to move, too afraid to breathe. Blood dripped from Dahlia's brow onto her arm, and she blinked away another drop as it formed on her eyelid. Shards of glass wobbled in the window frame before her, and splinters fell like diamonds spilled from a pouch, landing with a tink, tink, tink. Dahlia held her breath as her fear rendered her immobile. Her limbs were frozen. She couldn't think properly, and the idea that she was going to die here was as ridiculous as it was horrifying. She didn't want to die. Oh, throne, she didn't want to die. She looked over at Caxton and the others, feeling a terrible guilt that she had brought them to this. And for what? Some half-baked theory that an ancient creature was buried beneath the surface of Mars. Dahlia wanted to laugh at her foolishness, thinking back to all the things she had read and transcribed, what seemed, and might as well have been, a lifetime ago, that she'd never now have a chance to see. The oceans of Lairan, the great cliffs of Sharrow, the planet forests of A. A million wonders and miracles yet to be known. Wonders the expedition fleets were seeing on a daily basis. Neither would she ever learn more of the Carnival of Light on Sarosh, or vicariously live tales of battle like the victory on murder, or the vanquishing of the Hexen Guild. Likewise, the future paintings of Leland Roger, the compositions of Jeek and Powell, and the sculptures of Delafour were all lost to her. Nor would she read any more of the poems by Ignace Carcassi that she had grown fond of, despite their slightly pompous tone. This was no way to die, and the injustice and unfairness of it railed against the cruel fate that had brought her to this moment. She closed her eyes, her fear of the dark vanishing instantly in the face of this new, immediate threat. In the face of death, her desire to live surged, and her connection to the ether pushed aside conscious thought. Dahlia felt her mind reaching out beyond her body, as it had when she had seen how to construct the throne of the Akashic Reader, but this time it saw further and deeper than ever before. This time she saw into the heart of the cabin machine. The connection lasted the merest fraction of a moment, but in that moment she saw the very essence of its existence. She saw golden lines, bound together in a glowing web, each strand an answer to a question she hadn't yet asked. In this realm of the senses, she saw the light that was the mind of the cabin machine, a filthy, corrupted world of artificially created synapses and neurons. Its orspecks crawled over the wreckage like an invisible host of hungry spiders, and her flesh crawled with goosebumps as she felt the tread of a million legs across her skin. The machine's senses sniffed like a scavenger, hunting out juicy morsels to devour. Dahlia's inner vision bored into the burning heart of the machine's consciousness, marveling at the intricacy of the design, the complexity and magnificence of the work, and the infinite patience that had gone into crafting such a miraculous engine. A perfect meld of organics and artificial components had been used to fashion the cabin machine, and the genius of Lucas Crom, the adept whose name and skill she could read in every aspect of the design, was a thing of beauty. She saw the wonder of what Crom had created and felt the horror of what it had been made to do, what its builders had done to it. They had made it kill a man it had called friend, and then exposed it to something so dark and so terrible that Dahlia's floating consciousness recoiled from its warped malignancy. Its memories were of feelings and emotions, the memories of a newly created intelligence too inexperienced to realize how such things could be manipulated by the unscrupulous. Corruption lay in the heart of its consciousness, like a bloated spider sitting at the center of a web that spread its blood-hungry canker to everything it touched. The folly of creating an artificial sentience, a forbidden science since a forgotten age of war, only to pervert it to the cause of murder, struck Dahlia as typical of mankind's skewed brilliance. It was a machine that could think for itself, and its first autonomous act was to kill. Just what did that say about its makers? For all its brilliance, however, it was still a machine, and bound by the fundamental principles of machines. It still gathered information the way any other sentient being did, and such things could be fooled. Though the infinitely dense strands of light that were its warped consciousness were corrupt beyond imagining, Dahlia sought out the neural pathways and areas of the machine's brain that controlled its perceptions of the outside world. With a natural sense for such things, Dahlia blocked the machine's ability to process the inputs coming from its Auspex, and though she felt its sensory apparatus sweep over her body and those of her friends, the signals never reached the action centers of its consciousness. As though sensing that something was wrong, the machine swept its Auspex over the ruins of the corridor once more. She sensed its confusion. "It knows we're here," she thought, "and it's going to keep looking until it finds us." With another twist of its mind, Dahlia created a tremor of life signs further down the maglev, and sensed its savage joy as its targeting systems acquired the false readings. Thunderous, roaring, crashing gunfire erupted from its weapons, and Dahlia felt the maglev shudder with the impacts. Lasfire and heavy explosive rounds tore into the distant wreckage and obliterated the dead bodies within. Its guns ceased fire, and Dahlia allowed the counterfeit life signs to blink out, feeling its feral glee as it reveled in the slaughter. The image of blood dripping from a brass throne onto a mountain of skulls filled its thoughts. Again, its Auspex swept over the maglev. Dahlia felt the machine's disappointment as she blocked its perceptions of them, and it concluded that it had killed everyone aboard. Its task complete, the machine turned smoothly on its axis and moved off down the tunnel. As it went, Dahlia read an encrypted data squirt confirming the killings travel through the airwaves to its masters in Mondus Gamma and Olympus Mons. Dahlia kept her grip on its perception centers until it had traveled beyond the range of its targeting Auspex, before letting out a breath and opening her eyes. The smashed interior of the maglev corridor came back into sickening focus, and Dahlia's stomach lurched as her brain struggled to adjust to the sudden transition from the domain of the mind to that of the physical. The aftermath of the machine's attack, blood, burned plastic, seared flesh, and the sight of so many corpses was overwhelming, and she vomited copiously. Dahlia coughed, retching and heaving, until she felt her grip on reality solidifying. She heard voices speaking in hushed and amazed tones that they were still alive, and she smiled, even though searing pain pounded inside her head.
"It's gone,"
said a voice that Dahlia recognized as Zush's.
"I don't believe it,"
said Caxton, his voice on the edge of hysteria.
"Thank Ares," breathed Severin tearfully. "Please, can anyone help me? I think my arm's broken."
"Dahlia," said Romeo 31, "are you all right?"
"Not especially," she replied with forced levity, "but I'll live, which is more than I thought I'd be able to say a few minutes ago."
"Can you move?"
"Yes, but give me a minute."
"We don't have a minute," said Romeo 31. "We have to move in case it comes back."
"It won't come back," said Dahlia. "It thinks we're dead, or at least it will for a while."
"Then let's get out of here before it realizes its mistake," said Romeo 31.
In the upper reaches of Olympus Mons, Kelbor Hal inloaded the encrypted data blurt from the cabin machine. Looking out over the surface of Mars, he took a moment to survey the landscape, knowing that soon it would be transformed into something wondrous and new. The power that boiled from the depths of the vaults of Moravec was intoxicating, and every day brought fresh miracles as he and his fellow Dark Mechanicum, a term Melgator had coined, found new ways to bind it to the metal and gristle of their creations. Weapons, servitors, Praetorians, and fighting vehicles were imbued with power, twisting them into new and terrifying forms that were divinely primordial in their savage beauty. Monstrous engines of destruction that would be the heralds of the new power rising in the galaxy were taking shape in Olympus Mons, and the forges of those adepts and magi that had bound themselves to the cause of Horus Lupercal. Billions toiled in the weapons shops and manufactorum to realize this grand dream of Mars resurgent, and none who touched the powers unleashed to roam throughout his forge remained unchanged. Chants echoed from the darkened thoroughfares of Olympus Mons, mobs of hooded worshippers hunting down those who did not embrace the new way and feeding their blood to the hungry machines. Brazen bells tolled constantly, and howling klaxons shrieked with the godlike power of the scrap code. The transformation of his forge was a magnificent thing, and Kelbor Hal knew that what they did here would echo through the ages as the moment the Mechanicum was reborn. He turned from the armored glass of the viewing bay to face his followers. Regulus, Melgator, Ertzi Malevolus, together with holographic images of Lucas Crom and Princeps Camulos, stood attentively before him. He could see the chittering lines of scrap code infesting their augmetics. He nodded towards Lucas Crom.
Dahlia Cythera is dead. Once again, your assassin and thinking machine prove their worth.
Crom accepted the compliment with a short bow.
Then it is time, said Princeps Camulos. My engines long to make ruin of the magma city.
The bear-like Princeps Signoris of Legio Mortis was clad in beetle-black armor, and Kelbor Hal read the warp-enhanced aggression flaring from him in waves.
Yes, he said, it is time. Send word to the commanders of your allied legios, Camulos. Tell their engines to walk and to crush our enemies beneath their mighty treads. It shall be done, promised Camulos.
Kelbor Hal then addressed his fellow adepts of the Dark Mechanicum.
This is a great day, my acolytes. Remember it always, said the Fabricator General. This is the day Mars and her forge worlds cast off the yoke of the Emperor's tyranny. Unleash your armies and stain the sands of our planet red with blood.